Spilling the Broadway Tea with your special host, Mitch Wisniewski.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 14 of Broadway Beat. I am your host, Mitch Wisniewski. It's 2018, first episode of the new year. It's Broadway Beat is back and, you know, probably the same as ever. I just want to thank everyone really quickly who followed, commented, a question, left a review, or just listened to the show in 2017. You all made it an unforgettable year for me, and I couldn't do it without you guys. If you haven't already, make sure to rate, leave a review, and subscribe if you're listening on Apple, or follow the show if you listen on SoundCloud so that you can be notified when I post new episodes. Having said that, let's get into the show with today's amazing guest. He's a very talented actor, singer, dancer, and writer. He's been on Broadway in Rock of Ages, The Addams Family, and he's currently wrapping up a storm in SpongeBob SquarePants, the Broadway musical. Welcome to Broadway Beat, Wesley Taylor.
Hello.
You're here. You are here following up your onstage wife, Stephanie Hsu. She was on last time I recorded.
Yay.
We have the whole Plankton family on here now.
Yeah, the Planktons.
So it's 2018. Got any resolutions?
You don't really need to make resolutions when you're already perfect, Mitch.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. I feel the same way.
Let's see. Seriously, resolution. I want to get better at listening to people I don't agree with.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
2016 and 17 were very difficult years, obviously, in our political landscape, and I just found myself really disappointed in family and certain friends. So disappointed and angry that I was unable to listen to their fears and anxieties. And I guess I just want to be able to have more productive dialogue, not just scream and shut people out of my life. So more empathy, understanding, listening.
That's great. That's a
thanks.
Good one. I don't know if I have any. Maybe like drink more water. I don't know. I feel like that's everyone's now.
I could do that too.
Your empathy and I just need some water in my life. Well, let's jump into the news of this week.
Let's talk about Broadway news.
I don't know if you know this, Wes, but you have actually been news on this podcast before. So it's kind of, it's full circle. When you got cast in SpongeBob, we talked about it. Oh gosh, who was that with? It was with Jake Boyd from Be More Chill. We talked about.
Jake.
Yeah, he's great. So let's jump into the news. First story, Waitress creator and star Sarah Bareilles is set to star as Mary Magdalene in NBC's TV presentation of Jesus Christ Superstar Live in Concert. NBC has also revealed the concert will be filmed live in front of a live audience at the Marcy Armory in Brooklyn, New York. As previously announced, John Legend will play the title role of Jesus Christ, with Alice Cooper as King Herod. Regarding the announcement, Bareilles said, "To say I'm excited about this performance is the understatement of the century. This score and this musical have been a part of me from a very young age, and it will be one of the great thrills of my life to sing these iconic songs. It's incredible to see the beloved medium of musical theater being embraced by television audiences, and this cast and creative team is extraordinary. I feel extremely lucky to be a part of the project!" Exclamation point. Additional casting for Jesus Christ Superstar Live in Concert will be announced at a later date. All right. So, Sarah Bareilles, of course, amazing.
Very exciting, yeah.
Yeah. Did you picture her for the role? Maybe could you have seen her as Mary Magdalene, or was there anyone that you were like, okay?
I mean, I'm such a fan of Sarah's. One of our songs actually in SpongeBob, Poor Pirates, which John Ruiz sings as Patchy the Pirate at the top of Act 2, was written by Sarah Bareilles.
Oh, amazing.
It's a great song. And yeah, I mean, I'll definitely be tuning in for John Legend, Alice Cooper, Sarah Bareilles doing Jesus Christ Superstar. However, I've only seen Jesus Christ Superstar once, this last revival with Josh Young as Judas. And so I think a concert version is the right way to go with this particular show. I don't really know it very well. I don't really know the show very well. I don't really think I have like the voice for Andrew Lloyd Webber music, that sort of screeching rock tenor thing. But I have a lot of appreciation for it. And I'm very curious, but yeah. I don't know the show well enough to be like, I don't know.
Yeah. I think the only like, Well, one of the big roles that's still like outstanding is Peter's, or not Peter, Judas. So that'll be interesting.
That's a big, yeah.
That'll be really interesting to see who they put in there. You know, like I said, I don't know the voices, don't really know the shows very well. I would love to see, especially since Sarah Bowles, Leslie Odom Jr. would be a great Judas.
Maybe. Oh, that would be amazing.
Just throwing that out there.
He can sort of do no wrong in my eyes.
Of course. Speaking of Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals, it is recently reported that the legendary composer has written a new song for the upcoming film adaptation of his hit musical Cats. No title has been announced for this song, but it will be sung by the kitten Victoria. The composer additionally said that although the film has not been officially greenlit by working title, casting is underway. As previously reported, Les Miserables film director Tom Hooper, who won a directing Oscar for The King's Speech, will direct and co-produce the big-screen adaptation of the long-running Lloyd Webber musical for Universal Pictures. The production was previously filmed live on stage and released it in 2000, starring Olivier winner Elaine Page as Grisabella. Based on T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats, the musical has become an international phenomenon and has continuously toured the U.S. for 30 years in various union and non-union productions. In 1991, Cats, which produced the standout hit Memory, became the longest-running continuous tour in U.S. history. It won 7 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Best Book of Musical, a 2016 revival of the musical ended its run on December 30th, 2017 at the Neil Simon Theater. So I feel like we've been getting a lot of news about musicals that are being adapted into movies. You have Cats and Wicked and another one that we're going to talk about a little bit later. What is your thoughts on film adaptions of musicals?
I think they're great because you always want more and more people introduced to this art form who may or may not have access to Broadway or the West End or whatnot. And I think you want to be able to lure in, say, curious audiences with big names, yes, but without making the material suffer. So big stars who can handle the responsibilities the show demands, which is tricky. And I feel like sometimes Hollywood makes exciting casting choices, per se, sometimes over the right casting choices. I thought that Chicago was executed really, really well.
Yeah, that one's awesome.
The film of Cabaret in the 1979, I think, Liza and Joel Grey, that one's a masterpiece. But like Bob Fosse directed that, and again, the stars were beyond capable. So that's what's important to me.
Yeah. Is there any beyond capable people that you'd like to see in the Cats movie?
Well, myself.
Of course. Of course.
No,
after you just talked about how you can't sing Andrew Lloyd Webber music.
No, I'm serious. Give me Rum Tum Tugger. Yeah. That's what I want to do. I know maybe I'm not a celebrity, but like they always give one or two parts in these movies to a Broadway person, like Aaron Tveit in Les Mis or Keala and Greatest Showman. And, you know, so put me in the Cats movie. I'll do Rum Tum. Okay.
That sounds good. All right. Next story on the docket, Tony winners Patti LuPone and Ben Platt will perform in the 60th annual Grammy Awards, which will be broadcast live from Madison Square Garden, January 28th on CBS beginning at 7:30 PM Eastern time. Tony winner James Corden will host in light of the show's return to New York after 15 years. A two-time Grammy winner, LuPone, will reprise her 1981 performance of Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. And Dear Evan Hansen's currently nominated Platt will perform a classic from West Side Story in a special Broadway tribute honoring the music of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Leonard Bernstein. Also set to perform are Grammy nominees Childish Gambino, Lady Gaga, Little Big Town, and Pink. First-time nominee Platt is up for Best Musical Theater Album for Dear Evan Hansen. Now, I don't have too much to say about this, except that we're going to hear Patti LuPone sing Don't Cry For Me, Argentina again.
On the Grammys.
I'm so, like, I'd forgot that I put this story in the outline, and I just got excited again. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's always fun to see Broadway represented at the Grammys in any capacity. I think Broadway theater is becoming more and more accessible and mainstream. thanks, of course, to people like Lin-Manuel and Bobby Lopez and Kristen and Sarah Bareilles and the likes of those people. So I think it's exciting to watch the relevance of music theater grow and become not such a niche thing.
Well, yeah, because it's like I read this book. It's a really great book by it's a history of musical theater. I don't remember what the name of it was, but it was really good. And it was saying about how Broadway used to be that, like, in the 50s, they made the radio hits. Like, they made what was on the radio. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool with, you know, Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen, all these shows that are kind of like kind of bringing that back a little bit. It's
absolutely,
it's amazing. Bear the Musical, formerly Bear a Pop Opera, is about to become Bear the Movie. It's in the works from Tony-nominated producers Hilary Batorik-Weaver and Janet Billig-Rich, with Tony-nominated director Kristen Hange at the helm. Hange was the original director of the musical and adapted the screenplay for the film. The film is adapted from Bear a Pop Opera, a rock musical with a book by John Hartmer Jr. and Damon Intrabartolo. And the lyrics by them as well. The story focuses on two gay high school students and their struggles in a private Catholic boarding school. The creative team is currently looking for bare testimonials of what the piece has meant to fans. Producers are asking lovers of the musical to self-record 1-minute pieces of their personal experience with the show, its score, and its story. Bear a Pop Opera debuted in 2000 at the Hudson Theater in Los Angeles, then at the American Theater of Actors off Broadway in 2004. It's gone on to premiere in Toronto, Sydney, San Diego, the Philippines, Cardiff, Seoul, Chicago, Brighton, and Austin, with a revival in Los Angeles in 2013. With a greater awareness of bullying and LGBTQ suicides and the movement to legalize gay marriage, Hartmer, Arima, Lynn Schenkel, music supervision, and Travis Wall choreography analyzed the show, making it a book musical with resulting changes that included making the St. Cecilia's students' relationships more complex and changing and removing characters, adding and removing songs, and incorporating current technology and social media. It opened off Broadway at New World Stages in 2012. And if you want to record one of those testimonials, you can go to bearthemovie.com/we-need-you to submit your testimonial. So, Bear, a Pop Opera, do you have any experience with it?
Yeah, well, first of all, this is exciting news for Kristen Hange, who directed me in my Broadway debut, Rock of Ages.
Amazing.
I love Kristen. I'm very happy for her. And the producers you mentioned are from Rock of Ages, too, so I'm pretty familiar with this
the
team, I guess.
Whose names I butchered.
I'm so like sorry. Janet and that's who. No, it's fine. In terms of my connection to the piece, well, I performed Are You There with that duet with Matt Doyle at Joe's Pub like a million years ago. And I think that's the extent of my experience, just like singing that one song. Oh, wait. Mm-hmm. I saw the New World Stages production with Taylor Trench and Barrett Weed and Missy Pyle.
Yeah, there were so many cool people in that cast.
I know it's sort of a cult hit with the fans, and a lot of the music really affects people. So, yay.
Yay. Like we said, bigger audience. When something gets made into a movie, it's always like the audience gets bigger, everyone gets bigger, and then just more people can be exposed to it, which is amazing. So that's it for the news. That's all the news there is. but we get to do fan questions now.
Who's got a question for the guest? Let's hope it doesn't make them depressed.
If you don't know how to submit a fan question for the show, on my Instagram every week I do a post where I announce who the guest is, and in the comments of that post you can submit questions there. Sometimes people like the lovely Wes Taylor feature it on their story, and if you follow them, you get to know, and sometimes they don't. So follow me if you want to be sure that you get a fan question for each new person who is on the show. So my Instagram is @BroadwayBeatPodcast, and every week you get a little notification that will tell you who the guest is, and you can submit questions for them, because they're always a fun guest. The first one comes from Megan, @MeganTaylor44, who asks, what were your first thoughts when you were cast as Plankton?
Well, I was living in LA, and I had just done this 3-day intensive workshop in New York with the whole cast from the Chicago tryout, who already had their offers for Broadway. Mm-hmm. And I did not have an offer. This was this was basically a 3-day audition in front of the entire company, which was a little intimidating.
Yeah.
And when I got off the plane at LAX, like when I landed back in Los Angeles, they called and offered me the part. So I was very happy, but surrounded by people in an airport and conflicted by the fact that I'd likely have to move back to New York and drop out of this play I was about to do and I was really excited about. And there was just like a whole bunch of logistical stuff I started immediately stressing about. But I was also relieved because deep down I really wanted SpongeBob.
And how is so like that work? You say that it was like a 3-day audition. Was it really stressful being around the company who have already done the show, who already did it in Chicago? Like, was that really stressful for you?
It was really nerve wracking and like just a lot of pressure. And I tried to take all that pressure off because I was like, you know what, if this doesn't work out, like, fine. That's, you know, it's a win-win. It's a win-win no matter what happens because I was really enjoying my life in L.A. and had a car and I was about to do this. I was about to play Benjamin in The Graduate opposite Melanie Griffith as Mrs. Robinson, which was like a dream job.
Oh, cool.
And I was just very content with life. So it was a little bit conflicting. But I didn't necessarily want to move back to New York. I like landed in New York for that reading and it was like pouring rain and cold and like the trains were screwed up and like, I just was like, I don't necessarily want to move back here. And then I was in the reading with everyone and I was like, man, it's good. Damn it. The show is actually good. I have to do it. And Tina Landau is a dream. She is, you know, I don't use this word lightly. I think she is a genius. And so I sort of had to drop whatever I was doing to work with her.
Yeah. At Ethan.skaters asks, what is your best Smash memory?
Smash,
the TV show.
Yes, thank you. I mean, I have lots of amazing memories from Smash, but it was 2 years of my life. But maybe one of my favorite days, I think, was when Bernadette Peters was introduced and she played Megan Hilty's mother, this sort of famous Broadway actress. And she comes to a rehearsal of our sort of fictional Broadway musical Bombshell. And she performs Rose's turn for the company. Now I saw Bernadette perform this role on Broadway when I was in high school. And here I am like sitting 3 feet away from her 10 years later, watching her do it over and over, take after take. And, you know, my character, Bobby, got to sort of queen out in that scene, which, if I'm honest, wasn't really acting. And she insisted to not do every take to track for emotional purposes. She did a good amount of takes full voice to a click track. And that shoot day was just sort of surreal to me. It was amazing.
That's amazing. Oh, I can't even. I just like, oh, that sounds so fun.
Yeah, it was amazing.
At whammy.rsaw wants to know, on a scale of making a Hot Pocket to brain surgery, how hard is it to rap when the going gets tough?
Well, neither Hot Pocket nor brain surgery. I mean, look, it was really hard to learn. Took me a solid week of nonstop drilling. But now it's sort of solidified in my brain. Pretty easy to remember. The hard part is more about breath, like where to find a catch breath and my responsibility to spit it out and not get ahead or behind the beat. And this is difficult because it's after the dance break and I'm very winded and trying to hide it. And you know, I also do it downstage center in front of 1800 people in the Palace. And I have the entire cast surrounding me and staring at my face when I do it. So like no pressure.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, if you ever decide to leave SpongeBob, you are prepped and primed to be in Hamilton. So
it's basically my audition for Hamilton.
Yeah, like you said, this is your several month run to be an audition for
Correct.
Hamilton.
Correct.
At Audrey Olixia asks, what's your opinion on geese?
My opinion on geese?
Yeah. We have hard-hitting questions here on Broadway Beat.
Yeah. Man, these fans be asking the important questions. Don't know that I have much of an opinion on the species. I do remember learning at some point in time that geese are like very territorial. They'll like sort of attack you if you invade their space.
Oh yeah.
I think that was a warning given to me once many moons ago when I was near some geese or something, but
we had these geese in front of my high school back in the day that would like chase that would like it was a game because it's suburban high school and there was nothing to do to like get close to them and see if they would come after you and chase you. So
wow.
Yeah, geese are dangerous.
Man, what kind of games was I playing? The wrong ones, apparently. Not
the ones where you got chased by geese in the suburbs.
Wow.
At Your Face Is Awesome asks, how did you meet Isaac?
Isaac went to North Carolina School of the Arts, which is my alma mater as well. And he just graduated. He just graduated this past May, and so did I. Just kidding. And I graduated in 2008. Just a sensible 9-year age gap. I came back to school. You know, I come back to teach and to talk to the students and visit faculty. And I loved that school. So I try to come back quite a bit. And we actually met a couple years ago when I was visiting campus, and he was 20 and a junior, and we hit it off, and we sort of kept in touch, and so we've known each other for a couple years, but we've just been dating officially for about 4 months, which, you know, he got cast in Once on This Island, which is like 3 blocks away from my theater, and it just, we sat at the same sort of schedule, and like they opened the night before we opened. It's just sort of it's crazy.
Yeah,
but it's great.
Good.
That's how
that's
we met.
Great. That's a cute story. That's really cute. At Penguin Girl 2020 wants to know if you could if you could be any part in any musical ever, who would you want to be and why?
I don't know. Something fun and unexpected, like Lola in Damn Yankees.
Okay.
I don't know. I'd like to give the MC at Cabaret another go in due time. I did that at the Signature in DC, and I think that was early for me to play that part. And I'd like to give that another shot in the future. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Here's a variation on that question. At Jade Me 13 asks, if you could play any other role in any show that's currently on Broadway, which one would it be?
Oh, no question. I want to play Pearl Krabs in SpongeBob. I have a picture of me in her costume backstage when I was trying to convince Tina Landau to let me cover her. she gets to sing the best stuff in the show, and you know Jalen crushes it, and so we're all like backstage singing it. Pearl Krabs, that's my answer.
I like that. At Delonius _ says, I really enjoyed your and Alex Weiss's web series Indoor Boys. What was it like putting an independent web series on its feet? Do you have any advice for young writers who are trying to do something similar?
This was my Indoor Boys was my third venture in a sort of narrative driven web series that I produced myself. This time it was with Alex Wise. We co-created, co-produced everything. And I'm very proud of our short little first season of it. You can watch it at indoorboys.tv, by the way. But my advice, the information age demands content, so get off your butt and create, upload, share. when it's out in the ether and people inevitably write nasty comments and they hate it, don't give up. Remember that art is subjective and the trolls are waiting to attack anyone and anything, and trust that you are doing the work by opening yourself up and sharing anything that you have to say. So keep making, keep writing, keep creating.
Yeah, That's great advice. Also, about trolls, I don't, like, legitimately do not understand trolls. Like, in my life, I've never felt it, like, to put a mean comment about something. Even if I didn't like something, you just, like, click away from it. I've never understood people who, like, need to voice that they didn't like something.
Yes.
Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, same.
At S Slowtown asks, what is your guilty pleasure at the moment?
Guilty pleasure. Well, I just finished the fourth season of Black Mirror and the second season of The Crown, like, last night. That's not really guilty pleasure.
Those are two great TV shows.
Critically acclaimed series. Instagram, social media. That's a guilty pleasure that consumes me sometimes. Dating a 23-year-old digital native doesn't necessarily help.
Fun though, because you get a lot of like fan art and stuff. So it's that. I mean, I understand why that would be guilty. If someone's making fan art of me every day, I would be like,
oh my god. Well, the fans of SpongeBob are a different breed. I mean, it's like the amount of fan art that I get from the fans of the show. It's just like I was getting like 10 sketches a day. It was like I have to somehow showcase this amazing artwork, and so I've like been doing sort of these weekly posts on my Instagram featuring a lot of the doodles and stuff, and like I'm gonna stop it next week because I feel like 10 weeks of doing that is a good run, but yeah, no, it's been really sweet and fun. Cool.
Yeah. At XXX Roan, I don't know what your life is, Roan, but I am a little bit judging you by that username.
Yeah.
Wants to know if you could be someone else for a day, who would it be and why?
Wait, the first face that popped into my mind just now was Ariana Grande.
Okay.
But why? But why? That's my answer. No explanation.
All right. I can't get over the Oprah speech last night, so I would say.
Oh, that's a better answer.
Yeah. I was thinking about this. I read this and I was like, if you could think about how much damage you could cause as someone like really huge for a day, like that would be not like damage, but like how much you could just like change culture. Like people have, people have news stories written about them when they like tweet something like kind of crazy. So like, I don't know. It would be too much pressure. I would probably want to be like, I don't know. I'd be XXX Rowan.
Yeah, totally. I want to know what that's like.
Yeah. At Laney _Kirk says, tell us about your worst/most embarrassing audition ever.
Oh, God. I have so many, honestly. So many that I've like even retold some in my web content. If you check out some of the web series, you'll find some.
Because your web series, they're about being one of them, or two, is it two, one or two of them that are about being in, like an actor in New York, right?
Yeah, two of the three. You know, it could be worse. It's pretty autobiographical, but yeah. Anyway, you'll find a lot of like personal stuff that I sort of exaggerated into a little more silly situations, but. Yeah, I've retold a lot of my really embarrassing stories through the lens of my web content. But one that comes to mind is my audition for Juilliard at 17 years old. Because I wore all black, like turtleneck, slacks, jazz slippers. I thought I was Daniel Day-Lewis. Like I thought I was the best actor that's ever been. So, like, you really did need to, like, take me down a few notches, like, humble me, and they did. Like, I did my two contrasting monologues, and they were like, great, do you have anything else? And I was like, yes, classical or contemporary? And they said classical, and I said, Shakespeare, Ibsen, or Moliere? And they said... Shakespeare, I guess. And I said, comedy, tragedy, or history. I'm not kidding. I had like 15 monologues prepared.
Oh my God.
Because it was like quantity over quality. like if I just like impressed them with my grand theater knowledge, I was just a ridiculous person and I needed to be put in my place. So that was probably one of my worst auditions. It's just so epically hilarious now looking back on it. Anywho, yeah, that's, I'd probably say the Juilliard audition.
That's amazing. At underscore hey Lolita hey asks, what is your favorite thing about working with Stephanie Hsu?
Stephanie. She's a godsend scene partner. We came up with so many bits together just by playing with each other and sort of just staying open to possibilities, to yes anding one another's ideas and never judging each other. And most of my stage time is opposite her, so the working relationship is crucial, and she makes me feel very safe. I'm in excellent hands. So just the other day, a scene was sort of feeling stale, and I opened up to her about it, and we tried new things in the scene that night and found a new, delicious moment or two. And so it's that. It's her willingness to keep discovering these two characters and their dynamic with each other. She's the best.
Yeah, she is. She is very much the best. And like I said, if you would like to listen to more about Stephanie Hsu, check out the last episode. She was on, and she was lovely. She's a lot of fun. At Broadway B-Way Mar wants to know, what's your favorite fruit?
Bananas. Okay. I'm a monkey. I eat at least one banana every single day. Anything banana flavored, bread, ice cream, you name it, I'm into it.
What about the fake banana flavoring though, like the Laffy Taffys and like the
I really do like the banana Laffy Taffy. I honestly, even the fake stuff, anything remotely tasting of banana, I enjoy.
You know what I read? I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm going to say it anyway. That the bananas that were in that stuff, like those flavors were developed in the 50s when there was this like other breed of banana that has apparently gone extinct since then. So those flavors are developed on a banana that we don't like experience. Wow. I don't know if that's true. I read it on Twitter.
Everything you read on Twitter is true.
Exactly. Yeah. But like that, it, I don't know. It kind of makes sense. It doesn't taste exactly like banana, but like it could if it was another kind of banana. At Scintillating Salazar asks, how did you start your Broadway career and what inspired / made you want to do Broadway and theater?
I'll take the second part first. What made me want to do it, I was, since I can speak, I've wanted to be in front of people. There is something I think inherent about artists where, yes, music was a part of my life because my mother was a music teacher. So singing and music and performing, that was sort of like naturally presented to me. But I think like music to my ears when I was a child was like the sound of laughter, like people laughing at my jokes or in any way that I could get attention. So I was always a sort of song and dance man and like performer. But then I got to high school and really getting into English and dramatic literature, Shakespeare. And I think we read Othello in class a sophomore year, and the character of Iago that my teacher read aloud, because no student was allowed to read Iago. She like claimed it. And she was, I just couldn't take my eyes off of her reading this part. And I was like, I have to do that. I have to play that part. And to this day, Iago in Othello is a dream role of mine because of that moment when I was 15 years old watching my teacher just read it. So that's really, I think, when I decided I wanted to be an actor more than a performer was sophomore year of high school. And in terms of Broadway, like I would come to New York a lot because my parents met and fell in love in upstate New York, NYAC. And so they would come to New York a lot to visit friends and stuff. And then I would make our family go into New York City, and I would have like a list of Broadway shows that we would have to see. And I was a little dictator in that sense. So the love and the hunger started very early.
Do you remember what the first one was that you ever saw?
The first Broadway show I saw, I mean, not touring company, but in New York on Broadway, was Beauty and the Beast. I was 8 years old, and I saw it at the Palace Theater, which I'm now working in.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Right before it moved to the New Amsterdam Theater, it opened at the Palace, and I saw it there.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah. At Alyssa underscore Riape wants to know, who in the cast makes you laugh the most and why?
Oh, well, Vasi Monpoint, who plays Bubble Girl in a million other parts, is just the funniest and stupidest. Oh, my God, she makes me pee my pants. Alan K. Washington, who plays Larry the Lobster, is very funny. Galen, who plays the mayor, is always cracking me up on stage, off stage. It really is the best cast to play with, I swear. It's really hard for me to single out one person as like the class clown because there's so many clowns.
Yeah, I mean, when you're doing SpongeBob the Musical, it's going to be right.
That's right.
At George's Sweaty Headband asks, how was your high school life?
Well, I went to an arts high school, Dr. Phillips Visual Performing Arts Magnet in Orlando, Florida. And I had previously gone to like this private Christian school. So high school was an explosion of culture and art and really changed my life, to be honest. Because, you know, I was going to this private Christian school attached to a Southern Baptist church and like, you know, very... Like, you know, the theater scene wasn't thriving and itching to get out of there. And so when I got accepted into the arts high school, it was everything to me. And not only for me as an actor and that sort of formative development, but just me as a person, because all of a sudden I was forced to be out of my bubble and I met the first Jewish person I had ever met. I met the first atheist. I met a girl wearing a hijab and a boy wearing a yarmulke. And I was like, what are these people? Like, it was, I'm not kidding when I tell you how sheltered I was and blind to culture before high school. It was a very, very formative, important time.
Do you have a favorite memory from like a play or a musical that you guys did in high school?
I got to do a lot of fun stuff in high school. I was Petruchio in Taming of the Shrew. Mm. I was the Baker in Into the Woods. I was Marius in Les Mis. Ren in Footloose. Malcolm in Macbeth.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, there was a lot of fun stuff. You know, we did a lot of theater. Whether or not we were ready for it or not, sometimes I don't believe in like, oh, they're high school level, so they can't handle that sort of text or material or whatever. You know, you just have to start diving in. Like, you just have to jump into the deep end. And with experience and exposure and then eventually training, you know, at drama school, you know, conservatory, college, whatever. But I think it's important to you know, quantity when you're young. Just do a bunch of it.
Yeah. At http.sky with a bunch of Y's asks, what's your favorite part about playing Plankton?
My favorite part about playing Plankton. Well, look, I feel like most of the roles you audition for in your 20s are innocents. They're doe-eyed deers, clean slates, fresh-faced, like brand-new-to-the-world kind of characters. And I'm not going to lie, those are tricky for me to be taken seriously as, because I have dark features, I have this sort of untrustworthy vibe about me, where people just want to know what's going on behind my eyes, or like they can't quite put their finger on me. So the darker... maybe more sinister roles are now coming to be more, and the older I get, and it does feel a bit more natural for me to tap into. And it's very fun. It's just very fun to lean into something that feels a little more inherent. Not to say that I'm an evil person, but I think that those roles are more complex and sometimes really juicy. And, you know, I've been able to make Plankton kind of sexy, which is not how people see the cartoon. You know, yes, he has a Napoleon complex, but we've also been able to add, you know, this sort of sex appeal that maybe he dreams up. You know, like my number, where it's basically an arc from like Harold Hill to by the end of the number, he's a rap superstar. And Tina was very adamant about making that arc, like starting off insecure and ending like a rap superstar. And it does help that I've been given, you know, they changed it from Chicago, then now I have this big dance break and speed rap, and like he gets down and dirty. And I don't know, I just like some of the freedom and leeway they've given me for the character.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Oh, making Plankton sexy. Because in the cartoon, he literally looks like kind of like a green hot dog with a little antenna. And like,
that's
he
right.
Only have like, he only has one eye, right? That's why you have the
right.
patch, right?
That's why I wear a patch in the
I
show.
Love that. I love it. See, that's like, that's what the kind of thing I show. Like, there's so many smart choices that like are so, that you, when you think about it more, it's like, oh, wow, yeah, Tina Landau is a genius.
Oh, I mean, it's just insanely inventive. I think it's probably the most creative show on Broadway right now. I'm not even, you know, I'm pretty humble about the shows I'm in, but for this one, I'm such a fan of my own show, which, maybe I should practice some more humility, but I just, I don't know. I think she's such a special director and, like pretty underrated. So yeah. Anyway,
Speaking of Plankton, Broadway.forme asks, will you ever find out the Krabby Patty secret formula?
Oh, no.
No?
No, I don't think he ever will. Of course, when I'm playing the role, I have to believe that one day I will find it. but no, I think that, you know, part of the success of such a long-running series is that some things never change. some things will always be, and that's how you kind of keep it going forever. So I think that he will always want it desperately, and he'll never get it.
Yeah. Were you, when you were like prepping and everything, did you watch a lot of it, or did you grow up watching it, or like what's your relationship with like? Because it,
yeah, no, I sort
iconic.
Of missed that. I sort of missed the boat because I grew up on like Doug and Rugrats and Hey Arnold and stuff like that. So SpongeBob came after my childhood, but I would catch it on TV and think it was clever and like more, you know, a little smarter than the average cartoon. A little more designed for the parents watching as well. And then when I got cast in the role, which by the way, you know, like it's funny because I wasn't a huge consumer of the cartoon before I got cast, but when I was auditioning and then like during, like once I got cast, I would tell people I'm going to be in SpongeBob and they'd be like, please tell me you're playing Plankton. So there is something sort of inherent about me that people connect with this character. But yeah, I started devouring the show as soon as I got cast. I watched a bunch of episodes. And my boyfriend is a huge super fan of the show, knows so much more than I do about the cartoon. So he's always sort of testing my trivia and knowledge. It's kind of annoying.
At Stress Pigeon wants to know, if you could dress Plankton for one performance, what would you have him wear out of anything at all?
Stilts.
Oh, would that be?
A muscle suit, a giant headdress. I don't know. So he can look down on everyone.
Yeah.
That's
steal,
what he needs.
Steal the Bette Midler costume from Hello Dolly and just make it green.
I think just like a good pair of stilts, just so that he can like, for once, you know, be able to look down on everyone.
In his head, he of course is looking down on everybody.
Well, he would like that, yeah.
Would you say, well, we kind of talked about this already, but would you say, at Dwarf Lee asks, would you say that Plankton is a hard character to play, or do you feel as if your personality and his mirror each other?
Well, I think I sort of answered this earlier. I think that there are many technical aspects of what I'm doing that are hard. And it obviously, as an actor, you have to challenge yourself every show to make it new and fresh and exciting every night. But I do think there is something within me, Wesley, that lends itself to this character specifically.
Inherently villainous. and this is the last question because we are almost out of time. But Ali Tietz asks, are you planning to do any more projects like It Could Be Worse?
Yes. I actually just shot something last night that I won't talk about yet. I have a second season of Indoor Boys that is going to happen someday. I just got to get Alex and I have to get on the same page because we make that together and he lives in LA and I'm doing a Broadway show in New York. So it is a little tricky to work from the same place and same headspace. And but that will happen because we left season one unfinished and we definitely do want to continue that story. So there will be a second season of Indoor Boys at some point. It Could Be Worse is over. I've sort of closed that chapter. But yes, I will continue to create and and write new tales for the web.
Awesome. Well, we will be on the lookout for those.
Yay.
And with that, the fan questions have come to an end. Thank you so much, Wes, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, where can the people... Oh, wait, if you have the opportunity right now, if you want to, what can you... If you have anything to shamelessly plug, what would it be?
Oh, well, first and foremost, come to the Palace Theater and see us SpongeBob SquarePants 8 times a week. Best day ever. Watch the first season of Indoor Boys, indoorboys.tv. Revisit It Could Be Worse, itcouldbeworse.tv. That's it.
That's it. And where can the people find you on social media?
I am Sir Wes Tay-Tay on Instagram. I am just Wes Tay-Tay on Twitter. And I have a fan page on Facebook. Yeah.
And you can find me on Instagram for submitting questions at Broadway Beat Podcast, and on Twitter for other things at B-Way Beat Podcast. Wesley, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been wonderful.
And thanks, man.
If you guys want to hear more about SpongeBob, you cannot get enough SpongeBob on Broadway Beat, make sure to check out episode 13 with Stephanie Hsu, and episode 4 with Sandy Cheeks, Lily Cooper. She was on way, way back in the day. Thank you so much, Wes, for coming on. And as we say on this show, have a great day. Even if you only have 10 minutes left in your day, have a great one. Bye, aww, guys. Yeah, I mean, it's cute. Bye.
Bye.
Don't be sad. Don't feel weak. Broadway Beat will be back next week.